I am Pierre Lumumba in the heart of Nairobi, Kenya, in our bid to unravel the things about and around the continent of Africa. Today, we focus on a critical issue, critical and important, the status of what is sometimes described as tribal laws. I choose not to use the word tribe, but traditional African law vis-a-vis the laws that were imposed on African peoples by the colonizers, depending on who colonized who. But before we get into that space, it is important to appreciate that African communities had sophisticated laws that touch on different aspects of their lives. The man who has documented this better than anybody else is Cheikh Anta Diop of Senegal. In many of his books, he has been able to demonstrate that African societies were sophisticated, so that if you went to the Bambara peoples of Mali, they had their own law. In fact, it is now accepted that the Mande Charter, during the reign of Sundiata Keita of Mali, they had already codified a law which was superior to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. In other words, they had systems of governance that worked. If you look at writers such as Chinua Achebe, when he talks about his Igbo community in his fictional book, Things Fall Apart, he talks about laws that existed. They were organized empires. If you look at the Yoruba peoples, the Akan people in Ghana, you look at the Bunyoro Kitara in Uganda, the Baganda in Uganda, the Zulu Kingdom, and many other communities in the continent of Africa, they had organized laws. Here in Kenya, if you look at the work that was done by Jomo Kenyatta on facing Mount Kenya, he is able to demonstrate that the Agikoyo of Kenya had laws that governed their well-being. Amongst the Luo of Kenya, we have the iconic book of Paul Mboya. So that essentially, when one looks at our laws, one sees that African countries had traditions that were well stabilized, and that these were disrupted when the colonialists came into the continent of Africa. With the advent of colonization, a number of things happened. Number one, that the colonialists came in with the administrators, they also came in with missionaries, and they also came in with anthropologists. And when they came in for purposes of the domination of African peoples, one of the things that they did was to impose their legal regime. The countries that were colonized by the British had what was described as the common law. The countries that were colonized by the Dutch and, of course, the Italians had a system of law which was characterized as the Dutch Roman law. The countries that were colonized by the French also had a civil law that was based on Napoleonic codes. So that by the time that the colonialists had settled into the continent of Africa, a lot of laws which were traditional to Africans have been decimated. It is also instructive to note that when the Arabs came, there was also the Arabization and Islamization of large components of Africa, particularly on the coastal part, so that the laws were Islamic and Islamic jurisprudence did take root in those early days. The question, therefore, that we must ask, did the interaction between borrowed laws and African laws affect Africa negatively? The answer to that question is yes. You know, whenever I think about the manner in which the Europeans subdued Africans, there is one movie that comes to my mind It is a movie called Roots by Alex Haley. He dramatizes the life of a young African who is removed from the Gambia. The young man is called Kunta Kinte. And when he's taken away, one of the things that they do is to change his name to Toby, to make him believe that he is no longer a part of his old community. He becomes a Frenchman if he was colonized by the French. You become an English if you are colonized by English. You become an Italian if you are colonized by the Italian. You become an Arab if you are at alliance with the Arabs and you cease to be an African. In other words, the design was to ensure that people abandoned their culture and adopted a culture that was not their own. When Chinua Achebe, for example, says that the white man is clever, he took a knife and put it on the things that held us together, and we are no longer one. Brother is rising against brother, sister rising against sister. That in itself is a clear dramatization of the impact of foreign law on Africa. And we only have to examine the impact in different sectors. Let us examine the impact of imported law in matters of land ownership. In Kenya, for example, which was a settler country, or Zimbabwe, which was then known as Southern Rhodesia, or Zambia, then known as Northern Rhodesia, or Malawi, then known as Nyasaland, or Nigeria, what they did was to impose a foreign law of individual ownership of land. And when they individuated the land titles, then they started creating conflicts between those who are farmers and those who are pastoralists. Today, African countries find themselves with legal regimes and land ownership systems which are not African. The only person who tried to change it after colonization was Julius Kambarage Nyerere in the eastern part of Africa. In the western part of Africa, they are lucky that the chieftaincies were retained. So amongst the Akan people, you still find land tenure systems which are based on traditional ownership of land. In Uganda, you still find what is called the Milo land system, which is based on the Baganda system, as indeed you do in Binyoro Kitara. The other country that spared itself the problem was, of course, Ethiopia, because Ethiopia was never colonized. And for that reason, their land tenure system has remained almost intact. If you leave alone land, you go into the area of mining. One of the problems that we have in the mining sector is because land became individual. And because when land became individual, the impact is that individuals can now sell land. And we see those problems in our part of the world. In the area of criminal law, they also brought in criminal laws, which in certain cases were antithetical to African modes of dealing with those who had engaged in criminal activity. The institutions such as prisons were imported into the continent of Africa. African law of governance was also affected. And I'm always reminded of these words by that great American, John Henry Clark, when he said, upon regaining independence, there is not a single African country that adopted a system of government that is based on African tradition. And he goes on to say, no African country will ever succeed through imported systems of government. And if one were ever to doubt, the conflicts that you see in Africa are indeed as a result of that. But I cannot but remember how foreign law has affected Africa by taking us to apartheid South Africa. When Jan van Riebeeck arrived in South Africa, and when Jan van Riebeeck established his outposts, and they created the apartheid regime, it was based on foreign law. It was based on the Bible, that Africans were inferior. The apartheid regime that was instituted by the National Party and individuals such as Hendrik Verwoerd was based on Dutch Roman law. And they said that Africans had to be dominated. They looked at the Bible and they said that it was God ordained. And for hundreds of years, Africans were humiliated, were dominated through the use of foreign law. It is not until 1995 that Africans were allowed to vote because there was foreign law. As I speak to you now, over 72% of land in South Africa is controlled by minority whites because of foreign law. Foreign laws have destroyed the continent of Africa. And that is why today, in many areas, Africans are now beginning to talk about what they call alternative dispute resolution. I hate that term. It is not alternative dispute resolution. It is African dispute resolution. Because African communities in their diversity had different ways of resolving disputes. The Ovambo have their way, the Ovimbundu have their way, the Agekoyo have their way, the Temne have their way, the Mende have their way, the Baganda have their way, the Bahaya have their way, and the Wasukuma have their way, the Mnyamwezi have their way, and I hold the view that the time is now for us to begin to re-examine how we do things. Even in matters of governance, the Oromo had their own democracy under the Gada system. The time is now for us to go back to some of our laws. And we are not romanticizing culture. Culture is dynamic, it changes, and it gets influenced by other cultures. We are simply saying that our cultures and our traditions and laws, which are good, and which can reinforce and give us confidence, ought to be given their pride of place. And the laws which are not useful to us and which were imposed on us by the colonizers ought to be jettisoned and kept in the museum of history alongside the spinning wheel and the original printing machine. Africa must now give meaning to the Kiswahili saying, Mwachamila Nimtumwa, he who abandons his culture becomes a slave. We can do it, we must do it, and it has been done. Indeed, at the African level, the African Charter on Human and People's Rights is underpinned by the realization that Africans have certain unique things that they do for themselves, and that is why the spirit of Ubuntu must be given its pride of place. As we continue with our conversations about the continent of Africa, we deserve a break, and that is why we say our bye-byes in the knowledge that we will interact again as we continue this critical conversation. Thank you and bye-bye.